40WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Welcome to the show. Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, will be my guest in a few minutes, so be sure to hang on for that. That's coming up in just a bit. We will be telling you about the Murray State SIU Edwardsville matchup because there's no show tomorrow. I'll be traveling on the road with the Racers. We'll return to have a show for you on Friday. So we'll get to our sports update and then the SIU Edwardsville Murray State matchup and then Ed. So it's all on today's show. First of all, let's get you caught up with the high school basketball and boys action last night. Indrafanil Marshall County rallied from 11 down at the half to force overtime. But Murray High prevails 70-66 to claim the 4th District regular season title and the top seed in the 4th District tournament. James Boone, terrific with 28 points. Ethan Clark chipped in with 16. The Tigers, 22-5. Next up for them, they'll play Saturday night when they host UHA in the Independence Bank Valentine's Shootout at Taylor Gym. Carlisle County made 9 trays on 45% shooting beyond the arc. They went on to a 65-43 win at Callaway County last night. Jeremy Darnell led the Lakers with 15 points. Callaway now 6-16 on the year. They're back in action at 7:30 p.m. Friday when they host Marshall County at Jeffrey Gymnasium. Other boys' games saw Graves pound Ballard Memorial 83-52. Mayfield an 80-50 winner over Fulton City. McCracken County defeated St. Mary 65-33. On the girls' side, Alexis Burbo and Macy Turley each scored 17 points as fourth-ranked Murray High stretched its winning streak to 20 games with a 64-42 win at Marshall County. The Lady Tigers raced out to a 20-9 first-quarter lead. They never looked back to improve to 26-1 on the year. With that victory, they clinch the 4th District regular season title and the top seed in the 4th District tournament, punching their ticket to the Region 1 tournament, just like the Tiger boys. The Murray girls are off until Saturday when they host Madisonville North Hopkins in the Independence Bank Valentine Shootout at Taylor Gym. Madisonville, pretty good team with a good record, although not one of the top-ranked teams in the state. They are very good. Charlie Settle scored 16 points and Megan Greer 15. Callaway County with a big win. They snap a 7-game skid with a 61-53 win over Carlisle County at Jeffrey Gymnasium. The Lady Comets, one of the better high school teams in the region. So that's a good win for Callaway. They're 6-19. They're back in action Friday night at 6 when they host Marshall County, part of that boys-girls doubleheader at Jeffrey Gymnasium. Other girls' games saw Graves waltz to a 63-23 win over Ballard Memorial. Mayfield down Fulton City 53-27. McCracken County an easy 73-21 win over St. Mary. Caldwell County 60. Dawson Springs 49. Lyon County 41. Webster County 33. Jamal Murray scored 24 points. Tyler Eulis had 14. Number 22, Kentucky beat Georgia 82-48 last night. Cats fans had to be really happy with the offense, but the defense was spectacular, holding the Bulldogs to a season-low 22% shooting from the field. Jamal Murray, terrific, with 8 of 14 from the field, and he hit 6 of 10 beyond the arc. The Cats 18-6 overall, 8-3 in the SEC. Elsewhere in the conference, Tennessee over Auburn 71-45. Florida beat Ole Miss 77-72. Mississippi State 78, Arkansas 46. Regional interest scores saw Cincinnati down Central Florida 69-51. Wichita State 74, Drake 48. The Murray State women's basketball team hitting the road tonight to take on SIU Edwardsville at the Vidala Bean Center at 7. SIUE nipped Murray State 64-61 when the teams met earlier this year at the CFSB Center. And Murray State will have to go up against the OVC preseason player of the year and Sharonda Butts, who's averaging 23.2 points per game in league play. Murray in ninth place in the OVC standings. They're a game behind three teams for eighth in that final OVC tournament spot. Airtime for the game 6:45 tonight on WNBS and 1340 WNBS.com. That means tonight's Cardinals Hot Stove Report will air delayed at 9:06 on 1340 WNBS. There are three games in the OVC tonight. Tennessee Tech plays at Tennessee State. These are men's games. Tennessee Tech at Tennessee State. Jacksonville State is at Belmont. And Austin Peay plays at Eastern Illinois. That game will air on the American Sports Network. On Thursday, Eastern Kentucky is at Morehead State. CBS Sports Network will televise that one. SEMO is at UT Martin. And then on Fox Sports Midwest, Murray State and SIU Edwardsville will tangle. The Racers with a pretty easy win when these teams hooked up last month, 70-54. The Racers shot the ball pretty well, defended at a fantastic rate. An amazing job by Jeffrey Moss on Barack Eslick, who came in. I think he's averaging about 26 a game over a, a multi-game stretch. He held him to 3 points. Eslick, still the team's leading scorer, 14.2 points per game. Carlos Anderson, a really good-looking freshman. Like the way this kid plays. He averages 10.4 points per game. But C.J. Carr, 7.5 a game. Yemi Makinjula, 7.3 a game. And Keenan Simmons, 5.8 points per game. They do bring some size off the bench with Grant Fiorentinos at 6'10", who averages 7.4 points per game. Jalen Henry averages 4.8 points per game. He is 6'8". Jake Newton can shoot the three, 39% shooter, but he's averaging only 4 points per game. And Josh White, trying to get some extra minutes, became eligible at Christmas. He's averaging 4.4 points per game. They're deeper than the Razors. They're taller than the Razors, but they don't shoot the ball well at all. 31% from three range, 39% overall. They are really having issues defending, giving up nearly 75 points a game, 46% from the field, and 40% from three-point range. They shoot the free throw about like the Razors do. They hit them at a 70% clip. The Razors, 71%. Murray led in scoring at the moment by Wayne Langston, 13.5 a game. But Jeffrey Moss creeping up at 13.2 a game. Bryce Jones has slipped to 12.3 points per game. He's in a bit of a slump, but we know what Bryce can do. He had a terrific start to the season. If he can get to playing right back like that, and we believe he will, this season will end very, very well. DeMarcus Croker shooting it well, 9.6 a game. G. McGee, 9.3 per game off the bench. Justin Seymour, 6.3 per contest. Chad Culbreth, 4.3. Charles Brown averaging 2.1 points per game. The Racers shooting 44% from the field, 34% from three range. Both of those stats better than Edwardsville. But Edwardsville, are the Racers giving up 45%. That's better than they're shooting, and 37% from three-point range. This one tips off at 7 on Thursday night at the Vanilla Bean Center. Murray State 12-12, Edwardsville 4-19, and our coverage begins at 6:25 on 1340 WNBS. I'll take a break. When I come back, Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, will be my guest.
Saturday on Compass Media Network's coverage of NCAA basketball. It's a top 10 showdown in Norman, Oklahoma, as the third-ranked Sooners host the sixth-ranked Kansas Jayhawks. Hi, this is Kevin Ray. Join Rick Mahorn and me for all the action as two of the best in the Big 12 square off. Can Buddy Hield and the Sooners hold home court against Perry Ellis and the Jayhawks? It's the Sooners and the Jayhawks. If it's NCAA basketball, it's right here.
Hear the game Saturday afternoon at 1:15 on WNBS. Are you struggling to find the perfect Valentine's Day date? Do you know what's better than chocolates and flowers?
Lost three. Good in the near corner.
A pair of Racer basketball tickets for the games this Saturday against SEMO. First, the women take on the Red Hawks at 5 p.m. Then the men take the court at 7. All junior racers in attendance will receive Valentine's Day candy and, as always, free popcorn. You won't look back at the games you watch from the couch. For tickets, call 270-809-3000 or visit goracers.com. Welcome back to the show. As promised, Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, is my guest. We'll talk Racer basketball in a bit. We're going to get Ed's thoughts on some high school action. Last night, Marshall County and Murray High hooked up. And if you want to see the gap between what is and what used to be in the first region, and when I say used to be, Marshall County still has a really good basketball team on the girls' side, Ed. They lost by 20 to Murray. Murray is just, they're that good this year. Marshall still has some amazing talent. I'm not sure that on Murray's worst night, I'm not sure if that could turn into a win for Marshall County, but at least as of right now, the way Murray's playing, they're rolling over everybody. And to go to Marshall and beat them by 20 is quite impressive.
It really is, Neil, and I think a lot of it just has to do with how successful that front court has been. There's no question that Marshall County and Murray both have very talented guards and can really spread the ball out and score in a variety of ways. But Murray's front court with Maddie Waldrop and Alexis Burpo, and then, of course, that high-low action. You've got Macy Turley at point guard, who's been a starter since eighth grade. It's crazy to think she's got, two more years of basketball, just about. That's what makes them so tough. If you think you can take away their front court pressure in Waldrop and Burpo, they'll spread you out with Lily Ramey and Macy Turley and Brittany Lawson and Lex Mays and whoever many guards they want to throw out there. And if you take away the guards, then they're going to get you down low with, they'll throw in Grace Campbell and Morgan Turley in the mix. So it's a, they're a really tough defend. I feel bad for teams that have to go up against them. just because they are so athletic at so many different positions. You really have to have a balanced team to go after them. And Marshall County is probably the most equipped team in the region to really deal with them, maybe Graves County. But the problem is just trying to beat them in transition. And it's tough to out-defend Murray. Murray, on their worst night, if you hold them to, say, 28 to 30% shooting, they're going to hold you to 22 to 23% shooting. So it would take a really crazy, crazy mix of events for somebody in the first region, I think, to snap Murray's winning streak. But I'm not saying it could or couldn't happen. I'm just saying it would take a lot of different little things. You're not just going to beat them in one category in a stat sheet and come away with a win. You're going to have to do a lot of things. You're going to have to hold them in the half court, keep them off the free throw line, keep them away from the three-point line. They're just so explosive in so many ways, and that's what makes them so special to watch this year.
Now, last night it was a little closer on the boys' side. It took overtime for Murray to put Marshall County away 70-66. James Boone terrific in that one, those 28 points. But what we are still seeing is no one has been able to take down Tillman in the first region, although they've had a couple of closer calls as Graves County played them to a 7-point game. Marshall County played them to a 6-point game. Although Tillman is still the front runner, our team's making up a little ground on the Blue Tornado.
I'm not particularly convinced that's the case. Last night, Murray had a double-digit lead before Marshall County surged back in the fourth quarter. And the one thing that I'm going to say, Marshall is always going to be a tough out. I don't care what their record is. Marshall's boys, especially at home, just have a little, shall we say, Filton magic.
Yeah.
They've got some Reconder magic. They always have. You know, they're really, really tough. At home, that's when they held Tillman to a 6-point deficit, you know, just a 6-point loss there. Tillman was also without one of his best players that night in Devin Hart. But that being said, teams may be figuring out how to best slow the game down and defend Paducah Tillman. But again, Tillman's boys are a lot like Callaway County's boys last year and Murray's girls this year. Just a lot of different weapons. If you take away somebody like a J.J. Reed or Savion McEwen, they're going to go attack with Jesse Dunnigan, Parker Bell, you know, Brandon Warfield. You know, they're going to be able to get you in a lot of different ways. They can start two or three different lineups. If somebody's injured, they've got a little bit of depth on that bench. They can, you know, Jordan Prather and guys like that, they can come at you at a lot of different angles. They're really good at attacking the basket, and they're really good at shooting the three-pointer and a decent free-throw team. And when you're just so solid in so many different offensive categories, and then you play pretty consistent defense and can get out and transition. Transition basketball is huge at any level, but especially in high school. When you can start speeding the game up, buying an extra possession for every point that they score, that's when things start really changing for teams, and that's what Tillman's been able to do this year. They've been able to play slow, they've been able to play medium, and they've been able to play fast. And when you can just play all those multiple speeds and win no matter what the scoring margin is, that's when it becomes evident that you're going to be one of the best teams in the region. But there's no question teams like Marshall will be tough out in the regional tournament. You know, if Marshall can make it back, which they should, I think, unless Callaway can surprise them in the fourth district tournament. But, you know, no question teams like Graves, Marshall, Murray, you know, they're gunning. Man, McCracken, too, for that matter, are gunning for Paducah Tillman, but I still think Tillman is probably at the top of the crop right now.
Let's talk some Racer basketball. The Murray State men's basketball team heading to SIU Edwardsville for a Thursday match. It's a team they handled rather well last time they met last month, but Ed, this is a Racer team. You know, Jeffrey Moss, he's red hot. He's averaging 25 a game his last three, but they've lost two of those last three games. Bryce Jones really having a tough time of it. I think he's starting struggling with his shooting and then his ball handling. I think his floor game struggling. I think he's just trying to do too much. It's proven that early in the season he was terrific, scored well, took great care of the ball, made great passes, and I think for Matt McMahon, he hasn't hit the panic button, but he just wants Bryce to go back to being Bryce. If that happens, this is a Racer team that can run the table and be the OVC West champions, but I believe that has to happen for the Racers to be able to do that.
I think you're probably right, Neil, but I do think I don't know if there's even a – I'm not saying there's not a need for concern so much as there's a need to just continue to stay focused on one game at a time. And I think that that might be, you know, maybe the best medicine at this point. If you look way too far ahead, you know, then you're already thinking, well, man, we've got to win the West. Whereas that can already be just too much on. I mean, it's like me studying for like a college final. You know, if I work on it like one chapter at a time, you know, it's not necessarily as overwhelming. Whereas if I think about the entire breadth of the semester, I might panic a little bit. I think that's probably where the Racers are right now. If they can just think about Edwardsville and move to 7-5, and then think about SEMO and move to 8-5, and then think about next week, move to 9-10-5, or even if something happens, they go 9-6. Well, then, you know, work from that point. You know, is there a problem? Has Martin, you know, gained ground? You know, has EIU gained ground? Those type of situations. If the Racers can just collect themselves, relax, continue to play possession by possession basketball, I feel like that's when they've been at their best. When they start building on each possession, it's kind of like the Prohm mentality when Prohm said, "Let's get three stops in a row." Hey, if the Racers would just work on getting two stops in a row, and their defense hasn't been bad, but get two stops in a row, score. Two stops in a row, score. And if they can just continue to build on that slow trickle down effect, then you know they should get a win at Edwardsville. Come home, defend some home court, get a win against Timo. All of a sudden, instead of being, you know, 6-5, you're 8-5, and that's a decent amount of cushion coming down the stretch against what now are big games at EIU, and then at home against UT Martin, and then it's been a long time, but Clarksville now becomes an imperative game for the Racers coming down the stretch, and I know a lot of fans. We're disappointed about that loss, and I know the team was disappointed about that loss, but I think something that people need to understand as well is after the Racers ran the table last year at 16-0, there is no team in the conference that is just going to roll over and say, all right, well, you went 16-0 last year, and we'll let you do it again this year. Like, the Racers are getting every team's best shot, and they're not. And Murray State's not the only team that's happening to. Belmont's getting everybody's best shot, as evidenced by EKU's big win last week. You know, Tennessee Tech is now trying to get everybody's best shot for as good as they've been. And it's just a tougher conference than it was last year. It's a lot more level of a playing field, in my opinion. But you're right, Neil. If Bryce can settle in just a little bit and realize that, you know, just let the game kind of come to him instead of trying to force action, the Racers are going to be okay.
You talked about getting the team's best shots in OVC play, and statistically you can back it up a bit with, to me, this is the craziest stat. There's a lot of really bad free throw shooting teams in the league, yet we're through 11 games, and teams against Murray are knocking down 76% of their free throws. There's not one team in the league shooting that well, yet against the Racers, no matter what, every team comes in and knocks them down, and there's nothing Murray State can do about that, Ed. They have no control over the other team's free throw percentages. Sometimes that's just, I guess, running into a team that happens to be playing a little bit better against you than they normally would against someone else.
Well, they're just more focused, and I'm not, you know, that's something, you know, there are a lot of factors here, and I'm not trying to back one way or another. The Racers have lost 5 conference games by a total of 23 points. They've won 6 conference games by a little bit more of a margin of that. Had a couple big wins against Jacksonville State, SIU Edwardsville at home, and things like that. You know, so that kind of inflates that just a little bit. But this is a Racer team that could be worse than 6-5 right now. If you don't win it, you know, if you don't get that win at EKU, you know, now you're 2 games back. I think there's some silver lining here, and I think a lot of fans and even pundits have forgotten just how thin this Racer bench is. They're still trying to develop A.J. Patty off of the bench. You know, Taryn Gilmore has been in and out with injury and sickness. Chad Colbreth was out 3 games two and a half games, really, with concussion. Breon Sanctus, you know, his ACL was torn just a few minutes into the Belmont game. It's just, you know, they're in the second half, and it's just, you you know, this isn't, you know, nobody's going to make any excuses, and I understand that. You know, losing Flomo at the start of the season, right before the exhibition game, nobody's asking anybody to make excuses. But if you look realistically, you know, after losing four starters, one being an NBA point guard, the other three playing in Europe, and from what I can tell, are all playing fantastic basketball in Europe, you know, in Sapp, Farrell, and Williams, for the Racers to be 6-5 right now, under all of these conditions, under all of these changes, and under all of this circumstantial, you know, injury, you know, whatever you want to call it, bad luck, 6-5 is, I don't know, I just don't think it's that bad, honestly. I know the Austin Peay loss was tough. I know there have been some other tough losses this season, but you start looking at the depth. I mean, Dave Luce threw out, what, 9-10 guys?
Yeah.
What did McMahon throw out? 6.5? 7? I mean, let's get real. Like, even a team like Austin Peay is deeper than the Racers this year. And I'm not attacking any one player. I see nothing but effort. I see nothing but trying hard. I see nothing but trying to get better out of this Racer basketball team. And I also see a team that has good chemistry. It's not great chemistry. It's not superb chemistry. It's not 16 wins in a row in the conference chemistry, but it's good chemistry. They're moving the ball well. When they win, they usually have a 60% assist-to-turnover ratio as far as buckets made, usually about 18 assists to 28 buckets. You know, that's when the Racers are playing at their best this season. And, you know, I agree the margin of error is too low, but when you look at just all of the circumstantial evidence, look at how many people had foul trouble against Austin Peay. I mean, you went from no foul trouble at SEMO to three starters and four fouls against Austin Peay and lose by 3 points, and really by 1 point because you had to foul there to get your ball back. But, you know, it's just these are the things that I look at throughout an entire season, and I know you do as well, Neil. And I just realize that the Racers really are just right there, and that's with seven guys. In a much better conference than it was last year. I mean, let's be honest. This is a much more level playing field, conference-wise, that we've seen in a long time.
Exactly. Tennessee Tech, Tennessee State being case in point there. Those used to be, for the most part, victories you could count on, not so much anymore. All right, so we have that. I want to know how you did on your Super Bowl prediction. I know I was talking with my guest yesterday, Josh Plinos. We both foresaw Carolina Panthers easy victories, and both of us were dead wrong. What did you think? And did it turn out the way you thought?
No, it didn't. But I was not displeased. First of all, I was displeased in general that it was Denver and the Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of some new faces. I mean, no offense to the New England Patriots or the Seattle Seahawks, but sometimes that gets just a little old. And it was good to see two teams that have just really thrived on defense. And I really enjoyed that. I did pick the Panthers to win a low-scoring game. I thought it would be like 13-6, 10-6. I told a lot of people I thought it would be about a 4-point game. And really, if you look at Denver's offense, they didn't do anything special. Didn't really have to move the ball that much. They had two or three kind of big plays. C.J. Anderson with a big run there and things like that, but, you know, it was just one of those situations where the defense has really shined, and Denver was more opportunistic. And, I mean, we've all seen the game. There's no need for me to really rehash it, but I was thoroughly pleased with the defensive efforts of both teams, and it just so happened that Denver came away with two or three turnovers at very critical moments, able to turn that touchdown, you know, turn that first fumble into a touchdown, and I think that really just kind of set the tone. I was displeased with some of the officiating, but overall I thought it was a pretty clean game. I still think Jericho Cotchery's over-the-middle catch was a catch. I'm not sure why that wasn't a completion. I understand that, you know, there was a discussion involved with that, but I think that also really set the tone for Carolina's offense. And it seemed like every big shot that they took down the field after that, outside of, like, the completion of Philly Brown late in the second half, they just really misfired on a lot of those big, deep passes. And it's not because of Newton's accuracy. I think they just kind of weren't feeling it after that. You know, it just was it became a different game. But, you know, for all the turnovers and all the sacks and things like that, I thought Carolina still had a chance there late. But you know, then Denver snuffed it out. And I thought Von Miller played a fantastic football game, and I thought Coney Ealy for Carolina, if Carolina was going to win that game, he probably would have been MVP. To finish with three sacks and an interception, that's the first time any player's ever done that in the NFL Super Bowl. And so I thought it was a special game. I know other people may think otherwise, may have thought it was a laugher, but for all the rules that are in place in the NFL for safety, and I'm not knocking those rules, but defense usually has to find different ways to get it done. You can't attack guys at the line of scrimmage. You can't really hold guys. You can't go for monster tackles and things like that. When you have a combined 12 sacks a couple forced fumbles and things like that in a Super Bowl, that's two defenses really pinning their ears back and going after it. And I enjoyed every minute of it.
I did too. I thought it was a terrific game, and I'm not disappointed in the way it turned out. It didn't turn out as I predicted, I guess is the best way to put
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And you and I have talked about this, and I talked about this with some other people. I think while it was rather poignant and special that Peyton Manning didn't retire on national television. As a matter of fact, he had an epic post game speech. I thought that, you know, I would have loved to have heard that Manning retired 12 to 14 hours after the game. But I get that as well. He didn't want to steal the limelight. But for it to be Peyton's, I mean, we're putting words in his mouth, but I think it's pretty evident that if this is his last ride, then, you know, congratulations to him. One of the greatest to ever play the game. And, we'll be awaiting that news over the coming months. But I think we'll probably know before the NFL draft what his intentions are. And if he comes back, I think he's earned that right. But, especially with how we dealt with Brett Favre's news of constantly returning, I think Peyton Manning has earned it. I mean, if Favre can play to 40 and Manning wants to play to 40, that's up to him. But, you know, when you think about going out at the top of your game, kind of like how Jerome Bettis did, you know, how John Elway did it, you know, and there will be some conversations there for sure. But, if that was Peyton's last game, then congratulations to him walking out as one of the best of all time.
Totally agree. Couldn't have said it better myself. Ed, I appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week, all right?
Hey, not a problem, Neil.
All right, that is Ed Marlowe of the Paducah Sun. No show until Friday. We'll see you then.